Welcome to the new Northampton Community Music Center podcast series. I'm Joe Blumenthal. I'm on the board of the Music Center. I've been involved almost since its founding. I'll be interviewing people mostly involved with the Music Center about music and music and teaching and musical instruments. I'm going to start off today talking to Adam Bossy, whose music you're hearing in the background. And here we go. So I think the first thing I'd like to do is just ask you to talk a little bit about your affiliation with NCMC, how long you've been teaching and what sorts of things you teach there.
So I've been at the school since 2009, so that would be 11 years. I'm on my 12th year of teaching there. I had just finished school at UMass Amherst with my grad degree, and I was looking for work and wasn't sure if I was going to stay in the Western Mass area, but I wanted to. And the week that the session had started for the year, the first week of fall, I had still been out of work. I was doing some teaching at home, but it wasn't enough to sustain me. And got a call from Jason to go in for an interview, and I went in, and it was the best term I could come up with was it was love at first sight. Got along great, and I love the school. He gave me a tour of it, and it sounded like the right fit for me as a teacher and exactly what I had been looking for once I had finished school. And what I liked about it as a teacher was that it gave me freedom, deciding my schedule. It also allowed me to just concentrate on my teaching and design my own program that I would be doing with the individual students. So I don't know if I had mentioned this yet, but I'm a guitar teacher. My background is in jazz and rock and more or less the electric guitar. So I teach everything that has to do with the electric guitar, and it all depends on what the student wants to do ultimately. But I started there that year, and from there it just grew. I started getting a lot of private students, and I decided to give all of my hours during the week to the music program at Northampton. So at that point, I think this is around 2013 at this point, I became a full-time teacher. And my role expanded from there. I started to teach a blues course for adult guitar players who more or less hadn't had an outlet to play either for their entire lives or at the moment. And an outlet to play with other people. So the idea of the class was a jam class. We would talk about blues guitar for a good portion of it, and then talk about how you, as a guitar player, play with other musicians. So we would have a drummer and bassist and et cetera, et cetera. That was the first program that I started that wasn't a private guitar lesson, and that still goes on today.
So how many people were in the blues class?
With the school, there has to be a limit of at least 5 students to sign up class to run. So we always had a minimum of 5, but I've had up to about 9 students in there at a time. Mostly guitar players would be, so let's say I have a class of 5 people. We might have like 3 guitar players, and then the rest would either be a vocalist of some sort or harmonica or sax player, but always with a bassist and a drummer.
Were all of the people in the class students, or did you have ringers for bass or drums?
No, it's always been all students, the bassist and the drummer. So at first, the class was designed specifically for guitar players, but we had interest with drummers and bassists and other instruments. The idea turned into, okay, let's make this a jam class that everybody could come into, and we would also talk about, like, what's a drummer's role in a band? What's a bass player's role in a band?
So was that a stretch for you to teach a drummer what to do in the band, since you're not, or do you play drums also?
I also play drums, and actually, I'm thinking about it, there was a couple years where we didn't have a student that was a drummer, so I played drums. Playing drums isn't something I do full-time as I do with guitar, but being in that position with the class for a year or two made it a lot easier for me to talk about it, say like, okay, this is how I approached it, and this is what you would want to do in this context. So it came really naturally because I played in a lot of bands. I'm from Northern Maine, so before I moved to Western Massachusetts, which was 2007, I want to say, I played in a lot of blues bands as either a guitar player or a drummer. I had a couple friends up there that had a studio, and we would play. So I would do that for fun, not knowing that it would help me in the future, in my professional life. So it paid off in that way.
I would imagine if you hadn't played drums before, it would be difficult to coach the drummer. Anyways, all of that obviously came to a screeching halt this year, in a way. So I'm curious about how you've adapted to the pandemic. I assume that you haven't been able to do the blues class this year, but you probably still have private students.
Yeah, so I had a couple other classes that I started to teach. I also teach a free improvisation course, which I've been doing that one for about 5 or 6 years now. And then last year I started a course on guitar pedals, and speaking about that whole world specifically. And that class was I tend to get a lot of younger students in that class because that's a whole new world for them too. There's learning guitar, and then there's learning all of the things that go along with it. And right now, gear is a very huge part of it. So, yeah, when the pandemic hit, I want to say this was March, and I had a meeting with Jason, and he said, "Well, we're going to be shut down for 2 weeks." And my initial thought was, "Oh no, what am I going to do about that?" And the idea was, "Well, we'll teach online through the computer." So I had sort of reservations about it. The basic things being when you're with a student, a lot of how they learn is not a lot of it, but a good chunk of it of how they learn is playing and playing with the teacher. So I like to actually like play with my students, as sort of an acting metronome, or just as a secure background for them to play on top of and explore. And so I had previously tried the online, teaching by Skype or Zoom kind of thing, and I just found that it didn't work for that style of playing. So I had some reservations about it initially, but in this case, we had no choice. So started teaching that way, and then of course, the pandemic continued. 2 weeks turned into the rest of the spring, and then it turned into the rest of the summer, and here we are in. Well, we're in December now, and I'm still doing that. So how I adapted and made it work, it took some time. I mean, it does. I've noticed it doesn't necessarily always work with younger students, at least in the way that I teach. I know that speaking with other teachers where they have very specific ways of teaching, it works fine. Younger students with guitar in the way that I like to teach, it's a very hands-on thing, and you just have to be in a room present with them and a parent, just to point out, physically what they have to do, but also just keep their attention and focus. But at the point when the pandemic happened this past year too, I had a lot of students that I had been working with for a while, and I found that it was actually a pretty natural thing to slide into. I had to learn how to do some things teaching-wise differently. So obviously I couldn't play along with the students, but I could send them a backing track over Zoom. So I'd say, okay, here's like, say I'm working on a blues with the students. Like, here's a backing track for 12-bar blues in this key. And what it allowed me to do is just sort of sit back and listen to them play, focus on things that I might not have even noticed in a room with them.
So let me just interrupt for a second, because it's quite possible that people who are listening to this aren't going to realize that when you two people try and play music over Zoom, that there's a delay that's called latency that makes it impossible to play at the same time. So I just wanted to throw that in because somebody who's listening might not be aware of what that is. Anyway, so you've sent the backing tracks and watched the student play along with them.
And I'll add to that too that the sound quality isn't always Great. So if you have two guitars playing over online, they're just the way they distort at the same time. It just say it's not meant, Zoom is not meant to work for jamming. But yeah, you can send. What I like about Zoom is that you can screen share, and when you screen share, you allow the person on the other side of the computer to hear what music you're playing on your side if it's through iTunes or YouTube or something like that. And it sounds very clear. And with screen share too, I can put up any of the charts that I have them working on, whether it's a song or a scale or something like that. It's very nice. In person, I tend to use sheets, paper and scales that I'm teaching them, and et cetera. In this case, it's like, okay, here it is on the computer, and just throw it up, and then you can look at it. So yeah, I would send them a play along or a piece of sheet music and just watch them perform. And when you're staring at a computer screen, it's not, you don't have a person in front of you, so for lack of a better term, the world isn't as big. There's not as many distractions in the room, so I found myself able to like recognize things that I might not have noticed in person. It's like, oh, okay, we haven't really talked about your picking technique on this side. So, and I'm noticing it now just by watching you on the screen, and somehow that gets a little more highlighted. So then that would send us into a direction of like, okay, let's work on this particular thing while continuing this. So it has. There's certainly some cons to it, but there's also some pros to it. I think by the middle of the summer, I started to really get the hang of it. Once we got into early fall, I realized, okay, we're still going to be teaching this way, so we really have to adapt to this. And it's not just a thing at this point in the world we're living in right now that this is just something we have to do to get by. This is actually legitimately how we're probably going to be teaching for the next year. So yeah, so one of the pros to that is I think I've developed some new skills as a teacher that I probably wouldn't have necessarily just by the normal way of teaching, which is in a room with the student with both guitars present and blaring or whatever.
So you think some of that'll carry through after this whole mess is over and you can be back to in person?
Yeah, I think it will. I'm not totally sure how yet because I haven't taught a student in person. I haven't really even played with another musician in person since the pandemic started, just for safety reasons. And so I have no idea yet how that'll carry over. I wasn't sure how things were going to change as a teacher going into this. And then things surface and go, oh, yeah, okay, well, I recognize that, and oh, that's kind of cool how that works. So I think the same thing's going to happen here. Once I get into a room, those things are going to be very obvious, how they turn out.
So do you record the lessons?
I don't, but I allow the student to if they want to. Yeah, that's actually something I would do in person too. I'd say if you want, it was always an optional thing. I noticed with a lot of students, we would always kind of go back to some of the same things if it wasn't something that was clarified were clear enough for them. Say, okay, if you want, bring your phone or a tape recorder in or anything like that. And
Well, with today's cell phones, it's so easy. It's just amazing.
exactly. And you can voice record, you can video record. I had some students video record just me playing whatever it was I'm teaching them, and they would come back and just have complete ease with it, or it was a lot easier for them. So this makes it a lot easier because the camera's on all the time. And so I do have some students that record it. The other great benefit to this, the biggest pro, I think, is that I've noticed my students have increased in their abilities a lot faster this year.
Increased in the ability to.
Just playing, how quickly they understand things and how quickly they pick things up. They're practicing, more or less. There's not a lot of what if you're stuck at home, there's not a lot to do. And if you're involved with something like this, with music, whether it's you're just starting out or you've been doing it for quite a while, it's like, well, what else is there to do? I have my instrument here. I'm gonna really dive into this. And one of the complaints I'd always had from students in the old world was that they just didn't have enough time in their lives or during the week to practice as much as they wanted to. They were still practicing, but they weren't, putting as much time into it as they wanted to.
Do you find yourself practicing more?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's been kind of a silver lining for me. I've been able to focus on things that I just didn't have time to before. I remember when I was in college, I had a teacher tell me, it's like, this is it. Like, this is going to be all the time you have in life to practice and, get into your adult life or professional life or whatever. You're going to miss this. Because you'll be lucky if you could find an hour a day, to practice. And they were right.
So have you gone off in an interesting direction that you'd like to talk about in your practicing?
Sure. More or less, just I've had more time to focus. And when you have more time to focus, your focus is much better. Like, say, for example, it's like, well, I have to go and do these errands, and I have to take care of this, and I have to be at work for this amount of hours, and then, of course, driving to and from. All these little things that happen in normal life that you don't even really think about because they're such a normal part of your day. When you lose all of those things, you realize how much of your day and energy and time those things were taking up. And if you empty your brain of those things, it's almost like the world is bigger. And so just the ability to focus without worrying about all of the other things that I have to do in a day makes such a huge difference. So I noticed that, say, like I can easily practice for 2 hours a day now, and I'll walk away after those 2 hours or whatever. Sometimes it goes longer than that because there's just freedom to it. I feel more accomplished, just because my mind is free of all this other clutter, and it's able to absorb things that I'm working on or learning in a moment. Beyond that, I've had time to work on music. I had been in a band for the past, well, actually the entire time that I've been teaching. I've been in several bands and have a band that I'm currently working with and making and releasing music, but that stuff would take time.
So have you been able to meet with your bandmates during this time?
No, a lot of it just has to do with, logistics of safety and all of that.
So you haven't been, you have you been doing any outdoor playing?
No. Our music's too loud.
That's
It would have to be somewhere far in the middle of the woods in order for
right.
that to work, but
Yeah. Well, I guess I play mostly folk music, so I guess it makes it easier to get together with friends outdoors and play.
Yeah, no, I'm primarily an electric guitarist, and I have, very big, loud amps, and I have to have that because he's just an incredibly loud drummer. We would record actually in the studio at when we would make our albums. We would record in the studio at NCMC, which was a really, really great thing to have because I just would have access to it. And Jason would allow us to record in that studio during vacation week so that, the building wasn't too full of teachers. And Jason would regret it. Even on weeks when there wasn't a lot of people there, the sheer volume of it would just shake the whole building. But it allowed us, again, it's another silver lining thing. We would, as a band, we would rehearse a lot. And during vacation weeks, we record a lot. And vacation weeks, not only because the school is available, but also because I had the time to just spend the whole day on recording a song or whatever. And with that gone and us unable to play together, we'd actually been able to work on more material. So part of being in a band and, keeping it going is you have to play live. And if you play live, you want to make sure that the band sounds good, and so there's a lot of rehearsal involved with that. So gigs are totally out of the picture right now. Obviously, you can't, play in a club with a bunch of people hanging around. It's too dangerous. So with that out of the picture, we've had nothing but time to write and all of that. So I hadn't myself had any recording gear at my home studio, and this year I bought a just a simple interface. I can actually even tell you the name of it. A Focusrite. What I would do is just record riffs or ideas or guitar tracks, and send them to my drummer, and he's got gear at his house too, and he would record. And so we actually were able to complete two records.
But as long as we're on the subject of the CD, tell me about the title of it. It was Fireflies. It was Fireflies in a Jar, right? So how, what made you come up with that?
So Fireflies in a Jar. So what I've been talking about at this point is my band Fred Cracklin, which is an instrumental guitar and drum duo. And Fireflies in a Jar is actually my own record. It's my first attempt at a solo record of my own songs that I wrote with lyrics and everything. I had never really sung before. Another class that I taught at NCMC was a ukulele class, and the focus of that class was songs. And through that, I really had to, I don't even want to say learn how to, I had to sing. So, and for me, singing doesn't come as naturally as just playing guitar or a lot of other instruments. So again, with, over the course of, I want to say, 20 years of my life of playing guitar, I've written songs with lyrics, but I had never had the courage to put those really out there and forward, because I just didn't feel like the singing part of it was as confident as I feel with like playing guitar. And again, with the pandemic, I had time to kind of look at those. And so all the songs that are on that record that I just put out under my own name, Adam Bossy, they had been sitting around for a while. And the name Fireflies in a Jar actually relates to just like, these are things that I caught, ideas that I caught over time and just put on a shelf somewhere. I want to say I started in May or June. Getting back into these songs was sort of a nice way to kind of look back on past creative ideas or just like feelings I had been in when I wrote those kind of lyrics. And going back to what I was saying before, where I've had more time now to work on things, I had plenty of time to say, okay, finally I can pay attention to these songs and maybe work on some things that I didn't feel confident with before, whether that was lyric writing or vocals. And I had just bought the recording set and was ready to record things. Tried it with one song first and really liked the result. And I had also been teaching a recording class at NCMC, so some of the things that I had been doing via that were really helpful. Those things started to come back too. So it was a lot of skills that I had kind of put on a shelf, or metaphorically in a jar, since long ago that I was able to explore. And I had only one other friend that worked on this record with me. His name's Matthew Thornton, and he's a cellist in the area that plays with a lot of singer-songwriters and writes his own fantastic music, and he plays everything. He plays drums and cello and bass. And so I would send him these completed tracks with guitars and vocals, and he would just record over them. So,
Is he in your other band also?
no, the other band is actually just two of us as well. So I tend to work in duos. Yeah, that other the Fred Cracklin band is guitar and drums, instrumental, and this was more my kind of thing. I would arrange everything by myself for the songs and the lyrics, and when I would send the song to Matthew, they would more or less be completed. He just had to put the extra things on them, like cellos or drums. In this case, it was like, here's, I kind of look at it like I gave him a picture and told him to, color in the lines.
On the website for your CD, there's a lot of paintings also. Are those paintings that you did yourself?
Yeah, so that's something I like to do on the side of music. If I sort of get burnt out on being creative with music, I have that as another creative outlet, the painting part. So,
Do you feel there's some connection between the paintings and the songs on the CD?
oh yeah, absolutely. All of the records that I've made in the past few years, at the same time, I'm going through some sort of art phase, and each of those records I did the art for. And it's because if I'm actively recording or creating or writing songs, I'm kind of like letting, I don't know, leftover energy, whatever, burst out onto, canvas or whatever medium I'm using. The paintings tend to be more abstract, more so than the music. And so I can't quite totally make the connection of
Well, the
what.
music has its abstract qualities also. There's lots of otherworldly sounds going on in there
Yeah,
for some of the
exactly. So I think, yeah, in some ways there's connections, but it's also sort of up in the air, which I think is good because it leaves all of that up for interpretation and it's out of my hands in that way. But with this particular record, I did a lot of art that had really bright colors, and so I think that's one part of it that I feel is connected to it. There's a lot of
Now, are you, I've heard some musicians say that they associate certain colors with certain pitches or something like that. Are you one of those musicians that has that association?
Sort of. I do know some musicians that have like true synesthesia. I've got a really fascinating story about one student actually who I worked with, and he was an older player, was phenomenal, and he came to me because he didn't understand theory at all, and he more like he just wanted to fill in the gaps. He told me, he said, "So I know how to play, but I don't understand what I'm playing." He was explaining all this, and I said, "Well, why don't you just play for me? Let me see what you can do, and then we'll talk about the theory side of it." He starts playing, and it's rare when I'm in a student, teacher situation because it's not a performance, but he just blew my mind. I felt like I was watching a performance that I was paying for and wasn't present to teach, and he played all of this stuff that. For me, as a practicing musician over the years, I wasn't able to understand until I got my hand on some theory stuff, and he's doing all of that. And he's and 5 minutes ago, he's telling me I don't know any theory at all. I said, "What are you doing? Like, how did you do that?" And he goes, "Well, when I look at the guitar, I see colors." And he said, "Literally colors. So if I, a certain tone matches with the color blue, and I will see that blue color light up on the fretboard." And then I see all the other blue notes, and then it turns into purple, and I know where to go, and it's all reactive to what chord's being played. And I told him, I don't know if I want to show you theory because you've got a gift here that
That's interesting.
it was very
So
rare.
we are almost out of time. I wanted to ask you also, just tell us some of the guitarists that have inspired you and what qualities impress you when you listen to a guitarist. What do you look for that?
It's the same story that I run into with most of my students. They start out with a hero, guitar hero that's more of the time. So I grew up in the 90s, so my favorite guitar players were Smashing Pumpkins and Dinosaur Jr., Radiohead, Sonic Youth. When you listen to those types of musicians too, they sort of tell you where they came from, and that opens up the door. So as I got older, I discovered jazz guitar and blues guitar. Kurt Rosenwinkel and Nels Klein and Bill Frisell were big guitar players for me going through college. And now the wonderful thing about guitar is it's such a huge instrument. There's such a wide breadth of guitar music out there. So I'm still discovering new guitar players today. I'm even getting them from students. Like, this is who I listen to, and it's like, oh, I haven't heard of them. The qualities that I like to look for in a guitar player, obviously, good playing skills, one side of it, but I think above all of that, and the thing that I really like to bring to my students is creativity. To that end, where there's a lot of guitar players out there, it's still a guitar. And so it's how much can you do with the guitar? And I think a lot. There's still just an amazing amount of things going on out there creatively that pushes the guitar forward and keeps it relevant in music. And so I really tried up on that part of it with students. Like, okay, obviously developing a skill, technical ability, awareness of what you're playing, theoretical knowledge, music history, and how that can go into your playing now and inform your playing. And also, on top of all that, what can you do to make this your own instrument, your own sound, and your own voice? So when I hear, all the guitar players that I just listed for you, they're all very different for me. Nels Klein, if I hear Nels Klein play on a record, I know immediately that's Nels Klein. If you're,
I'm afraid I'm going to have to wrap this up. I thank you so much for taking the time. It's been really interesting to chat with you. And
Okay, sounds good.
we're going to go out with Adam singing You Should Be You from his Fireflies in a Jar CD. If you want to find out more about his music, you can go to bandcamp.com and search for Adam Bosse, B-O-S-S-E, and you'll see his tunes and his pictures. Here hope you enjoyed the interview.
That you should be